street.
Was he also a bank robber in Missouri?
Oh, he was there. Would you like to take Mussolini? All right, Benito Mussolini. And then I want somebody to say, well, it's you now, brother. We're down to you.
Yeah.
I want you to take General Francisco Franco.
He was
a dictator in Spain. He was the one that allowed Mussolini and Hitler to try out their troops in the Spanish Revolution, and he was a staunch Catholic, decorated by the Pope many times, and one of the meanest men that ever lived. And if anybody expected me to cry when it was announced that Franco was dead, they just didn't know me very well. But Francisco Franco. Now, we're not having classes next Monday and Tuesday, so you have those days. And on Wednesday, we're going to be showing the first of the Schaefer films. And so we will have our first report. No, a week from, two weeks from yesterday. And so.
Francisco Franco?
Yes, Generalissimo Francisco Franco. He was the dictator of Spain. And when he finally died, people began to talk about how that his successor might be the Antichrist. There were a lot of preachers that got on that bandwagon that this man that fit all of the it is funny that we've gone through all of these cycles. I remember when Mussolini was going to be the Antichrist, and there was a man up here, not the McBurney that's in Glendale, but another McBurney, that had a radio broadcast, and he had a tent, but he went around California preaching. And even after Mussolini had been killed, well, he discovered in the Bible that the Antichrist had to be resurrected, and so Mussolini was going to be resurrected, and he was still going to be the Antichrist. And Hitler was called the Antichrist. And then, of course, when Kissinger was the Secretary of State, that boy, Kissinger is the Antichrist, or so on and so forth. Well, that's a lot of stuff and nonsense, and I'm not about to go into it, but I'm just simply, I'm not interested in all of these speculations that these preachers come up with, because that's just what it is, the speculation.
They were on the coffee on the record. They were on there one day, and they were talking about the Antichrist. But then one guy come on here, and well, they were all on the bandwagon. So Kissinger was going to be the Antichrist. And I called up, and I talked to her for about 15 to 20 minutes. And I told them all about the history of these people who were going to be the Antichrist and everything else. And they hadn't figured out his name and everything. Boy, it had to be him.
Yeah.
And I didn't say you can figure out a mathematical formula for anything.
Yeah. As long as I'm allowed to make up the
rules.
Yeah. And
they shut up and there wasn't anybody on the call.
Well, again,
because
they found somebody knew I was talking about. And you see, once you confront these guys, They have made their proposition, and then they start trying to find proof text for it, like these British Israelites and so on. Well, I saw your old buddy Price the other night, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper, you know. And he went on. He said, I prosper. If you're not prospering, you're wrong. Everything I do prospers. Blah, blah, blah. Well, he did. And so I just listened to one of them. That guy. Well, he hadn't studied the Bible very well. What about when James was martyred and Paul thrown in prison? Yeah, a lot better men than Paul.
Was he murdered
to
rescue your life and death and the power of God? He put that text is in my power. What I want to do, that's it.
Say,
Christ,
think of the
whatever I think about
myself. See, well, what it is, you've got to have guts enough, or you've got to be dumb enough to make a great big, serious statement and then boast about it. And people say, did you hear that?
What's right there in the Bible? I didn't say that. The man said it right here in the Bible, you know. And I think, boy. You have built a premise that just will not stand. You know, you just take an isolated, well, what he was preaching on was Psalm 1. Well, Psalm 1 says that the blessed man doesn't walk, he doesn't stand, he doesn't sit like sinners, but his delight is in the law of the Lord. Now, he didn't talk about that. And in his law doth he meditate day and night. And he is like a tree planted. He has a purpose. And sometimes that purpose may not be that you would have the very best of health. Some of the greatest hymns that we have were written by Fanny Crosby, a blind woman. You know, now, boy, blind people can't do anything. You know, they're not prosperous, and they're not, you know, they're not in good health, and so on.
So Crosby is mentioned on that Christ is a baby.
Yeah. Well, and Paul, he had some strong physical infirmity that
No. He's all around.
And but it isn't right.
He got sinners out there, they got to.
Yeah. But Paul, after he had prayed three times, the answer came, "My grace is sufficient for thee."
What are you complaining about?
Okay, now it is good, isn't it, that the Bible doesn't tell us what his thorn in the flesh was. Now we speculate. We say, well, the poor eyesight and so on. And there are good reasons for believing that. I'm not criticizing it. But the point is, by God saying, "My grace is sufficient." Now, if I knew for sure that it was the eyesight, then I would have to say, well, if I had poor eyesight, God's grace would be sufficient to meet that particular need. But that isn't what the Bible says. God's grace is sufficient for my heart trouble and for your problems, Luther. And so we need your back troubles, yes. It isn't any fun to hurt. And Paul didn't appreciate having this problem, but by the same token, it was there, and God meant for it to be there. He would not have permitted it. And I don't understand people that are just swept up in this kind of thing. I'm writing a new book now. I don't know if I told you about it or not. And my book is going to be entitled, "You Can't Get to the Hospital from Heaven." And, you know, this nurse, Kubler-Ross, and this doctor, Rawlings, I've written a review of his book, and others, you know, well, the National Enquirer the other day had at the checkout stand 60 people that had returned from heaven and hell with their testimony. You can't get back in the hospital from heaven. And it's just that simple, and I'm going to deal with that subject. But you know, there are people, boy, so-and-so had this. I've had all kinds of wild. But you see, the one person that did that was Paul, and he said, "What I saw was not lawful for me to utter." And so, you see, I have been having these hallucinations, and I've been having these blackout spells in the hospital, and they've been very frightening to me. They have, you know, because I didn't understand what was going on. And this last time I went to the hospital, they kept me in emergency about 3 hours. And then they decided I needed to be admitted to the cardiac care unit. And as we left the, I was, of course, on a gurney, and they had an IV running for about 3 hours. And this young attendant said, "Now I'm going to piggyback some lanacane into your IV while as we go." And as we went down the hall, those lights began to, and they got me on the bed, and I said, "Well, goodbye, folks. Here I go." And for 5 minutes, I was completely disoriented, and I knew exactly what was going to happen. But now I know the medicine that's doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's lanacane.
That's what it was.
Yeah, because that's the only thing that changes. And I have this tunnel experience where I go through a tunnel and I have to.
You did that?
Oh, goodness, I've done it so many times. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I have too.
But you see, the point is.
Finnegan does it to me.
Yeah.
Jim Robbins Finnegan.
Is that right?
Yeah, I can't take it.
Well.
So I just. Man, I go anyway.
But you see, these guys don't understand what's happening to them. And so they think it's of a spiritual nature.
Yeah.
And it just simply is medication, it's hallucinations, right, and so forth. And it has to do with your personal background and so forth, your subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's
yeah, and so I'm in the process of writing this book. Well,
I was coming down off of morphine in the hospital. I had 80 shots of morphine.
Yeah.
They would get them once every 3 hours. I had 80 shots that long.
Yes, it is.
And they started taking me off of it when I had a back operation and everything. I had a big, well, I mean, I had to be a the Lord came out of heaven, came right down to me, lifted me up off the bed, boy, had me up there in the middle of the air, all kinds of things.
Yeah.
You know, I was really good.
And you
said,
the oddest one was I was up looking at me in a casket. You know, these guys are always talking about how that their soul stays there and not in the emergency room, and they watch the doctor go. But I've never been in a casket.
No.
You see? And so I understand what's going on.
Yeah.
And the guys that are writing these books are not theologians. But now this Rawlings claims that he is a Christian. So I first had a heart knock. Talking to me right here. I wasn't over there. Because he had a young Latin girl that had tried to commit suicide. And he was on the hospital staff and was assigned to the emergency room at this particular time. And he said that when this girl came to, she told, and of course he said that she spoke such poor English and so weak that he had to get down like this. But he got so involved in that story that that girl had separated from her body and she could see him working on her and so on and so forth. And he wanted some explanation from me, the Presbyterian. And so I don't know if anybody wants the book, but I want to write it because I want to tell people what's going on. If they don't believe it, that's their problem. And there's a gulf there.
See, I had had so much pain and stuff still. They put me on the treadmill.
Yeah.
So I'm walking that treadmill and I just went out. You know, I lost control of it. My bowels, my water headed. And in this process, I went up. Left that body on the floor with that big long needle about this long. And this big because it's got a lot of needles in that needle that they put in there.
Yeah.
And I was trying to tell them, take the needle out. Well, now I left the body and I'm way up above looking at all the doctors. Then I suddenly came in the operating room and I left all these doctors around me, you know, and they were all around. And they had me all hooked up, the light was on me. And I could see, and I was telling me, tell them where needle is. You know, that thing was hitting me, you know. So I'm up here looking at them. I saw them down there on the table working on me. They were all around, you know, working on me. But nobody could find the needle. And I was telling me, tell them, show them where the needle is. That was the problem.
My first experience is when I was a kid and I was having my appendix out. And as I went to sleep, there was a ventilator like that, and I just went out straight through that ventilator. Now, you know, and for me to get around, well, I was talking to one of my pastor friends, and he'd had open heart surgery. Now, while he was in the recovery room, he thought he was in a communist prison camp.
Yeah.
And that their communist guards were out there at the door. And he wanted to jump out the window to kill himself because he knew they were going to kill him, you know. But, you see, to tell those things as though they were real and that they don't have any logical explanation other than some spiritual, great spiritual experience. If you want to know about heaven, hell, you read the Bible. You don't.
Yeah.
You don't talk to people that have been on trips.
Yeah. Those Catholics are barking.
Well, I was in the hospital here in Paramount, General, and they have a lot of Oriental help that they don't speak English very well. And one night I got the idea that the Japanese had taken over and that I was captive in there, and I could hear them, you know, speaking, and in the night.
You're not all the way out.
And the clocks would stand still. And, but again, you see, when we examine that thing in the light of what is really true, and then we sensationalize, well, don't you know that's exactly what the Pentecostals are doing? That's exactly what these charismatics are doing. I've had the experience. I don't care what the Bible says. The Bible's not. You know, when you've been there, you'll know. Well, I've been there, and I don't know.
I've been.
And
another thing, you see, now when I come to, sure enough, it was a lot of people around me.
Yeah.
When I come to, and I was on the floor. I wasn't on the table, but on the floor, they was working on me 9 miles.
Yeah.
He said, when I come around, I want to get up to the door. Hold still, don't get up. Don't get up. And I had this mask on and everything, you know. So I said, what happened? He said, well, do you always black out back then? I never
faced.
He said, you just did.
But you see, this time I was able to pinpoint exactly, I just told him, so long, I'll be back in a few minutes. And they timed me, and for the next 5 minutes, of course, they didn't know what was going on. My head just convulsed like this, my tongue, but when I, the same deal, but I now knew what it was. And it was a particular drug, and man, when I go in the hospital, you can guarantee that, that they're going to have them a bloody fight before yeah. they ever do that to me again.
Well, you write all over that chart, and I don't have them all the time.
Yeah.
No way.
Is that right?
All night long.
Yeah. Well, it would be like us saying that PCP and marijuana and heroin and all of these hallucinogens are spiritual experiences. Peyote, whatever. It's drug induced, false experience.
I guess this doctor figured out, I'm going to give him Demerol, and I'm going to put it in, and I'm going to shoot him. You see, if I could take either one of them probably, I could handle it.
Yeah.
But to mix them and then put them into the injection in the vein, I can't do it. I mean,
that's what happens when they take
I'm just committed. But now the reason that I want you to start with chapter 30, and we, the hope and Holocaust. And the reason is this. You are not going to understand a great deal about Baptist history if you don't understand the false hope that arose during this period of time and was shattered with World War I. But remember, this was the war to end all wars. And the things that led up to it. And the Southern Baptist Convention, particularly, was gripped with this idea of post-millennialism. We're going to make this world so good that Christ is going to come and just, you know, we'll have everything under control. We'll have governors that are Christians, and we'll have a president that is a Christian, and we'll have city councils that are Christians, and we'll have mayors, and so on and so forth. It didn't mean that they would have, literally won everybody to the Lord, but that they would, that Christianity would permeate the earth. They were just, you just examine the song. The kingdom is coming. The kingdom is coming. Oh, tell the story. As long as we tell that story, we can usher in the kingdom. And I remember vividly, I used to preach on the radio. And there was a Presbyterian minister in our little town that was a very liberal And one day he met me on the street, and he said, "Canavan, don't you realize the way you're preaching, you're delaying the coming of the kingdom?" And I said, "Preacher, your eschatology's showing." I don't know if he knew what eschatology was or not, but anyway, I said, "Your eschatology's showing." I said, "There isn't anybody in this world that can stop the coming of the Lord's kingdom." And I said, "And there isn't anybody that can face it." I said, you just don't understand what the Word of God says.
I get all excited to listen to people think I can't think very well at all. I like to hear people sing, and I come along with them, almost with them. They sing that song, and it comes to, and all their endeavors to bring you to the kingdom.
Yeah.
I just go flat to them. I know exactly what they're talking about.
Yeah. Or you bring the one next to me. You bring the one next to you, and I'll bring the one next to me, and in no time at all, we'll have them all. So bring them one by one. Now, the idea is, and they used to work this out mathematically. Okay, we have so and so many members in Baptist Church. Now, if each one will just win one this year, you see, we'll double. And then if each one will win another, and in a matter of just 2-3 years, you have pyramided completely out of people. You've won them all.
Yeah.
You see, that it's just that simple. But that's the old pyramid game that these sales groups use. You know, Bestline and others, they used to say, "Well, now, don't you see? You buy this, and you get so many people to work for you. And then they get so many people to work for them. And just look at all the money you're going to get." Yeah. A chain letter, same thing. But it's a pyramid. But you reach the peak of that pyramid very quickly, you know, and you just... I showed a guy one time, he was involved in this Best Line. You remember they finally, I think, put a $20 million something judgment against that company for swindle. But what they would do, they would charge people a dollar just to come and hear their sales. And then they would show you how, but I said, "Okay, let's just figure out this thing mathematically." And I said, "In 2 weeks, every body in the world has to be selling Bethlehem." In other words, if you carry that mathematical formula, as they have said it, in 2 weeks, you would have the whole population of the world. Yeah. Well, I think I did this one time in a Sunday school class. I said, "How many of you would work for a penny a day if I doubled your wages every day?" "Oh, there you are crying, you know." I said, "Okay. What do you think you'd be making at the end of a month if I started with giving you one penny a day, and then the next day, two pennies? And do you realize how astronomical that becomes in just a 30-day period?" I mean, those kids are, "What in the world is happening?" But you see, we don't understand. We make statements that just simply are not true. And that is, we can reach this city for Christ. Now, the way we do this is that we assign each person a block, and they win everybody on their block, and so on and so forth. It's just not going to happen, but this false hope was built up in this period of time, and that's when postmillennialism just gripped this country, and if you were anything but a postmillennialist, you just didn't know a thing in this world about the Bible.
Where we are now.
That's right.
If you don't understand what's going on back there in the rest of the world, when you talk to the same thing for Israel, for Israel, for Israel, for whatever, you have to have a whole soul view, are you?
Our lives are influenced by outside forces. And if we don't understand those outside forces and how they have affected our forefathers, we're not going to be able to withstand the forces that are affecting our lives adversely. Here we are in a permissive society that, well, after all, if we raise our voice, here was, I think his name is Robinson. He's a Southern Baptist evangelist. And he preached on his network that homosexuality was a sin. And the homosexuals got up all kinds of petitions. And one station, WBAP in Fort Worth, kicked him off the air because he had denounced homosexuality as a sin. Now, that may miss you, but WBAP was started by the Southern Baptist Convention, and that's where they got the BAP. And I don't know who is in charge, but I know how WBAP started in Fort Worth. It started as a Southern Baptist radio and outlet. But just imagine, if you can, that here a man pays for his television time at commercial rates, and here they are demanding equal time to answer him. You know, demanding. And because WBAP was scared that the courts would you can't even call sin sin anymore. Well, what if we start saying, well, if you hit adultery, living together, cohabiting together, and calling that a sin, that we've got to kick you off the air, they're going to close the Bible on us, you know, folks, if we just let this stuff go on. Yeah.
You know, I mean, really? And read about Pope and everybody else?
Well, even in Paul, right after the early apostolic, greet one another with a holy kiss. Well, they met, and they accused them of promiscuity, and they talked about the communion, the eating of the flesh and the drinking of the blood. And there they were out there killing people and drinking and cannibals. Just complete distortion of what we were, what God's people were doing. But again, it was, can't you imagine how you would feel? You see, the word atheist first came as a Christian word. In other words, The Greeks referred to the Christians as atheists. Why? Because when they became Christians, they threw away their God. They threw away their image. Those are atheists. Those are atheists. You know, it wasn't that Christians didn't have a God. It was that they didn't have a physical manifestation that they worshiped. And, of course, that caused them to be called atheists. Wow. Today, you know, we would be very offended. But by the same token, we don't have an image. We don't have some physical thing that we bow down to in the eyes. I know what, do you know what the black Muslims think of you? An infidel dog. An infidel dog. And they don't mind telling you either, do they? But they sure would like to sell you some of their literature.
From the bean pies.
Mm.
Bean pies.
Yeah. Is it in good?
I don't
Yeah, I've just never had it.
Yeah, it really got a good reputation of the bean pies.
Yeah. But again, it's like this Jane Fonda and so forth. They're communists, but they want all of the privileges of capitalism. They want to have their million-dollar movie contracts and whatnot.
Did you read the Atlantic Monthly Reader Digest about that pilot?
No.
Yeah.
You
know, we wouldn't allow anything like that over here, you know. And when he came to America, he fought the problems. You know, here he's walking the food store and looking at all the schools down. Well, you guys sure going to a lot of money. Just, or,
yeah, yeah.
Here just to try to
impress
me, yeah. You know, impress me. This is a common. You can't tell me that.
But again, you can understand how people would feel that. Angela Davis, she, remember when she was teaching at UCLA, she was supposed to speak at USC, but she charged $3,000 per teacher. And the students that were sponsoring were short. They only had a couple thousand, whatever. And she wouldn't come until they came up with the $3,000. You see, you are a communist for money. And money's bad to communists. You know, that isn't the way we're supposed to live. But you see, that isn't the way that people really want. The last I knew, she was lecturing, but I don't know that she was, I don't know of her teaching in any public institutions anymore. I don't mind Angela Davis teaching in a communist school.
Yes, sir.
It would be wrong for the state of California to hire me to teach what I believe. You see, because I would teach a very distinctive Baptist way, and but again, wouldn't it be wrong for us to have people on the faculty here that were not teaching Baptist doctrine? We have said that this is a Baptist school, and so we are, I think, duty bound. Now, if we can no longer agree on the Baptist position, then it is my duty to remove myself. It is not the duty of this school to change. The school has certain principles. All right, now here is a free enterprise school supported by tax money of people that have accepted the idea of free enterprise. And so for us to allow people to come in and teach that's all wrong and it ought to be torn down, that's still, you know, destructive. And it doesn't make a bit of sense not to me or to anybody, got, you know, anyway, of thinking straight. Well, anyway, for tomorrow, we'll take chapter 30, and... Franco, any encyclopedia will give you a whole rundown of Franco, and it'll have a, you know, the Britannica, the Americana, any of them. Yeah, and...
Mm-hmm. When I go, show these lines of business, there are two kids there. There are hopefully and when I go there, I cannot set a living like that with a
call. That's right.
Pastor,
yeah.
I cannot do that.
But you can plant.
I can plant some seeds, but I have to be very careful. And the same thing, when I'm over the phone to the TV, when I'm talking to somebody, I can tell about the Lord and the Lord, but I cannot come home.
And again, there's nothing wrong with that. Paul said, I became all things to all men that I might win. I've got to be able to communicate with people. I have to be able to know. That's the reason that I think it's good for us to know what other people believe, is so that when we are confronted with those guys, we don't look like a calf staring at a new gate, you know. Or what's it, you know.
Well, you know,
I thought you old kids would understand that.
You know, especially talking on the radio, you get a lot of feedback that I never understand or never understand.